Malavati was too shy to ask what Swamiji was doing. So she simply busied herself cutting vegetables. "Today is a fast day," she said, as if chiding Swamiji for cooking. "You have to understand," he replied. "In Krishna consciousness, a fast day means a feast day. We are offering this to Krishna." Malavati continued to keep her distance from Swamiji's whitish, sticky-looking preparation until he completed it and placed it on the windowsill to cool. "Later it will harden," he said, "and we can cut it and serve it." And with that, he turned and walked out of the kitchen. When Malavati finished cooking and served Swamiji his Ekadasi lunch, he asked her to bring him some of that thing on the windowsill. He took a bite, seemed pleased, and asked Malavati to call Mukunda and Janaki to taste it. Janaki took a bite and explained, "It's wonderful, simply wonderful, incredible. What is this?" Turning to Malavati, Swamiji asked, "What is in this preparation?" "I don't know, Swamiji," she said. "You don't know," he replied. "You were standing right by me in the kitchen and you don't remember?" Malavati's face turned red. "Oh, Swamiji," Malavati replied, "I was very busy. I just didn't see." "Oh, you are busy without intelligence," he replied. And he laughed for a long time until Mukunda was also laughing. Malavati felt even more humiliated. Swamiji asked Janaki if she could tell what was in the preparation. She couldn't, except that it was sweet. He then sent Malavati downstairs to get Govinda Dasi and Gaur Sundar. When they entered, Swamiji told Malavati, "Go get some more of that simply wonderful thing." Again, this time in front of four devotees, Swamiji asked Malavati, "So what is in this preparation?" And again she defended herself. She had been too busy to notice. And again he laughed until everyone was laughing with him. He then asked Govinda Dasi to taste the simply wonderful and say what was in it. Immediately she guessed, sugar, butter, and powdered milk. "Oh," Swamiji looked at Lilavati, "she is an artist. She is intelligent." To Lilavati, the whole episode was a devastating ordeal. Only later did she understand that Swamiji had been trying to teach her humility. That is Prabhupada's expertise, even while for the first time making what came to be known as simply wonderful, he's also making sure his disciples remain humble. This girl, Lilavati, was watching while Prabhupada was preparing the preparation, and she even was kind of on his case a bit, saying, "Oh, it's a fast day today, it's you know, what are you doing?" As if, you know, Prabhupada had maybe forgotten. The whole point was she didn't know what she was doing. So then Prabhupada asks her again and again, "What's in the preparation that I made?" "Oh, I was too busy doing things to notice what you were doing." And so Prabhupada laughed at her and got all the other devotees to laugh too. So you may think, well, this is very cruel. She shouldn't be humiliated in public. But Srila Prabhupada is concerned with the spiritual advancement of his disciples, and pride is a great destroyer of spiritual advancement. When we think we have some great ability that we can offer to Krishna, and Krishna must accept our great abilities. It's amazing how much confidence we have in ourselves, although we're victims of Kali Yuga, and how little confidence we have in Krishna. Sometimes we make devotional service an excuse to show our prowess and our confidence in ourselves, and we expect others to also notice that, when actually devotional service is simply how to give Krishna pleasure as Krishna likes it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 11, The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna, text 28. Vanang Vrindavanang Nama. Pashavyang Navakananam. Gopa Gopi Gavan Sevyang. Punyadri Trina Virudam. Another forest. Vrindavanam Nama. Named Vrindavan. Pashavyam. A very suitable place for maintenance of the cows. And other animals. Navakananam. There are many new garden-like places. Gopa Gopi Gavam. For all the cowherd men. The members of their families. And the cows. Savyam. A very happy, very suitable place. Punya Ajri. There are nice mountains. Trina. Plants. Virudam. And creepers. Between Nandeshwara and Mahavan is a place named Vrindavan. This place is very suitable because it is lush with grass, plants, and creepers for the cows and other animals. It has nice gardens and tall mountains and is full of facilities for the happiness of all the gopas and gopis and our animals. Purport. Vrindavan is situated between Nandeshwara and Mahavan. Formerly the cowherd men had shifted to Mahavan, but still there were disturbances. Therefore the cowherd men selected Vrindavan, which was between the two villages, and decided to go there. Om Agyana Chimam, Dasya Agyana Jana Shalakaya, Chakshu Militamina Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Was it here that I was discussing about Srivats, the Panchatattva, and Srup Damodar, and their conversation about the opulences of Dwarka as compared to the opulences of Vrindavan? Oh, that was at Volcanic Ashram then. Here you hear about the opulences of Vrindavan. Lush with grass, plants, and creepers for cows and other animals. Nice gardens, tall mountains. Full of facilities for the happiness of all the cowherd men and women and their animals. There's no matter in Vrindavan. Everything is everyone. Everything is personal, pure consciousness. The water, the grass, the trees, everything is everyone. And all contributes to Krishna's pleasure. In Vrindavan, everything is everyone, and everyone is devoted to Krishna's pleasure. Matter simply means forgetfulness of Krishna. Forgetfulness that Krishna is the owner and enjoyer of everything. Just like a cloud covers the sun sometimes. The cloud is the creation of the sun because the sun evaporates water from the ocean, and that water forms clouds. And the clouds cover the sun. Yet, and still, the clouds are the production of the sun. But the purpose of the clouds is to cover the sun. But if you get in an airplane and fly high above the clouds, Maya is matter, forgetfulness of Krishna. It is a creation of Krishna. There is nothing that's not a creation of Krishna. Krishna consciousness means how to rise above this deluding energy of Krishna and stay in the sunshine of Krishna consciousness all the time. So, love of God has two different modes, on reverence and spontaneous love. In Vrindavan, there is simply spontaneous love. The love of Krishna is not not checked by any awe and reverence of worshipping the great inconceivable majesty of the Supreme Absolute. Now, we must go to another place, Upananda, the elder, senior cowherd man is saying. There have been so many disturbances. We must protect Krishna. It's only by the grace of God that Krishna has been saved. So we can't be negligent about taking care of Krishna. This is love of Krishna in spontaneous love. The elders think that Krishna needs their protection. And unless they protect Krishna, what will happen to him? So, after the Rathayatra festival, Lord Chaitanya was dancing in front of the Rath cart. Then the Rath cart came to its end, and it was time for the Hare Panchami festival. And while they were waiting for this festival to start, Srup Damodar and Srivas had a conversation. Srup Damodar began to explain the glories of Vrindavan. And then Srivas interjected, "What is all this fuss about Vrindavan? It's simply some grass, some minerals, some flowers here and there." Why was Srivas Thakur talking like that? Because he was actually Narada Muni. And Narada Muni's relationship with Krishna is more reverence. So, Srivas Thakur, he was speaking like that because there's been so much talk about the Vrindavan love for Krishna. So, that is the thing about love of Godhead, that everybody is satisfied no matter how they are situated. So Srivas Thakur was saying, what's all this fuss about Vrindavan? It's just a place with some grass, some flowers, some big deal. But the opulence is Dwarka and the goddess of fortune. Have you ever seen anything like that? So, when Srivas Thakur was speaking like that, Sri Damodar said, "Oh, Srivas, you are speaking like Narada Muni. We understand. You are bound to worship Lord Narayan, Lakshmi Narayan. We understand why you're talking like this." So, love of Krishna is full of so many varieties. It's really tragic that we are so attracted to the varieties of this material world, as if spiritual variety doesn't exist. This is our problem. We don't trust Krishna. We don't trust devotional service because we think something's lacking. And then the glare of the material energy is so bright, as we've described several times, when you're driving on the road at night and a car coming towards you has its high beams on. Sometimes you may even have to pull off the road because you're blinded. And the glare of the material energy is like that. You lose your vision and you just get lost in the glare. So Krishna consciousness in the beginning means to do just that, to pull over on the side of the road and, you know, take some measures so that your original vision comes back. And we have to be careful we don't become blinded again. The material energy presents itself as being very solid and substantial, satisfying and for real. And the spiritual reality, it's a bit hazy, maybe, maybe not. Because we've been covered for so many births, we don't feel a sense of urgency about the spiritual reality. But the material energy, it makes itself very urgent to us. We all know what it's like to feel the sense of urgency about serving the material energy. And the materialists, of course, will say, you have to be practical. That means they're feeling the urgency of the material energy. But we say, the real practical person is the one who feels the urgency of the spiritual energy. It's not that we're not practical. We are the most practical. We understand the complete picture. And we reject the inferior practicality for the superior practicality. Those who say that Krishna conscious persons are not practical, they cannot see the full picture. Just like a little child is playing with his friends, and the mother says, "You must go to school." The child says, "Oh mother, why are you destroying my life?" That's the way the children take it. "Why are you destroying my life?" When actually, the mother has the interests of the child at heart. The child, however, doesn't understand. He thinks the mother's being impractical. "Here I am absorbed in the most important activity of playing." You all remember what it was like when you were little kids playing. It was the most important thing, to have a good time, to play. Playmates were your most important associates. And who are these adults to not take it seriously? In fact, don't you remember as children you wondered why the adults never played? What's wrong with these people, these adults? You know, why don't they play? This is what it's like to your trivial activities to be so serious and significant. You feel the pressings of the mature energy to be so prominent. As when it comes to devotional service, Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, we don't feel a sense of urgency. Well, Krishna, you know, when you're ready for it, you know, when the right time comes, then you become serious about Krishna consciousness. I mean, Krishna will always be there. Right now, we have to deal with some urgent matters. Feel the urgency of Maya, which is a false urgency. The sirens of the material energy are always going off. Calling your attention. Not only calling your attention, but purification means how to feel that urgency of the material energy less and less, and how to feel the urgency for Krishna's service. That's why we always stress engagement in devotional service, because there's no other way that one will escape the clutches of the material energy. There's no other way that one will understand Krishna. What is the point of our devotional schedule? What is the point of the Krishna Consciousness Society? The point is that devotees revive their urgency in serving Krishna. Now, sometimes people don't understand it. Oh, in your temples, sometimes it's hectic, so much to do, it never gets done, and people don't have their own space, and so on and so forth. But what we're trying to do in cultivating our bhakti, we're trying to develop a sense of urgency in serving Krishna, so that we can rise above the urgency of serving the illusion. We don't want to feel that material urgency anymore. That is Maya. When that feeling wells up in you, I must serve the material energy. We want to feel that same way about Krishna's service. That's why Prahlad Maharaj Rupa Goswami has a one prayer in Nectar of Devotion. I know that young boys are attracted to young girls. I know that young girls are attracted to young boys. I'm simply praying to you, Krishna, that my mind is attracted to you in the same spontaneous way. Everyone in this world today is mad over sexual relations. They don't have to think about it. It's being plastered everywhere all over society. And their consciousness is just swamped in these things. We want our consciousness to be swamped in the same way about Krishna and Krishna's service. So much so that there's never any other alternative except to serve Krishna. Then you know that your soul is actually, your soulful existence is revived, and you're acting on the platform of reality. What is the difference between material and spiritual? We have to start pointing this out to people, because nowadays everybody is using the word spiritual. If you, practically speaking, you talk to anybody today and they'll tell you that they have a spiritual relationship with their girlfriend or boyfriend. If spiritual is applied to everything and anything, spirituality, spiritual this, spiritual that. Prabhupada was speaking in Melbourne once to some newspaper reporter, and she was about trying to get on his case about how the devotees claim to be spiritual, but they are selling so many books, getting so many money from their books, and they have such nice temples. So she said, well, how can you, you're supposed to be spiritual, yet we see all these material things, money from books, nice temples. So you think, would Prabhupada go on the defensive? Well, you see, I'm actually... No, he's... Spiritual? You know what is spiritual? Tell me. You're talking spiritual. You say spiritual material. What is the difference? You tell me. Of course you can answer. They have no idea what is the difference between spirit and matter. Although they use the word spiritual. No conception of what it means. If anything, she was probably speculating spiritual means to do without everything material. And then what do? Without anything material, you must have a cruel existence. That's exactly what she thought. So therefore she said to Prabhupada, Why are your people, your members, forced to live such a Spartan life, getting up so early in the morning? Materialists, unless there's sense gratification, they can't understand why people do anything. And they think spiritual simply means you are forced to do without all the comforts of life. So she didn't, according to her understanding of spirituality, she didn't like it. At the same time, she's criticizing. You guys call yourself spiritual. Why do you have so many books, money from selling books and so many nice temples? But Prabhupada immediately got in her case. What is spirit? What is matter? You tell me the difference. We have to start pointing it out to people because they're using the word so much. The difference between spirit and matter is whether things are used in Krishna's service or not. Let us say, and you've heard the example so many times, that there's money lying on the street. The materialist, the karmi, the bogey, the sense enjoyer, will take it. Ah, money for me. The jnani, the impersonalist, they also practice austerities like the Vaishnavas, but their goal is impersonalism. They'll see it, the money, and say, oh, nothing is mine. I don't want to touch this money. I don't want to become contaminated. And the Vaishnava, of course, will see the money and say, oh, this is Krishna's money. It is for Krishna's pleasure. The materialist always has his conscience nagging him. Oh, I'm taking all these resources, but they're not really mine, and people are always trying to take things from me and take what I have, and they always have these kind of complexes and guilt feelings and things like that. The jnanis, the impersonalists, they also feel guilty. Nothing is mine. We don't want any part of the illusion. But at the same time, they think, why do I have to neglect all the pleasures? They feel guilty in that way. It's kind of unnatural just to reject all pleasure. I mean, that money, that could bring me a lot of pleasure. But I'm a tyagi. I'm very austere. No, I cannot. But in their hearts, there's some nagging guilt, some doubt. Oh, it looks pretty nice, that money. I could do a lot of things. Yenye arandaksha vamuktamanina triyashta bhavad avashuddha buddhaya. Vamuktamanina. They think they are liberated, but because they haven't pulled out the desire of enjoyment, therefore their so-called liberation is imaginary. How does the desire to enjoy manifest in impersonalists? They want to be the supreme. So, the whole difference between matter and spirit is how it is being used. If something is being used in Krishna's service, it is spiritual. And if something is being used in the service of our own sense gratification, that is material. And as soon as you try to use something for your sense gratification, automatically you have forgetfulness of Krishna. Now, what are people's attitudes towards nature? They talk about nature as if there's no owner and controller. So many times they'll tell you, oh, the world is here for you to make out of it what you like. The world is here for your happiness, or you should try to be happy as best you can. Never inquiring who is the owner and controller of all this energy. For example, it's not that money is just lying around. We're speaking in the conventional sense. It's not that money is just lying around without an owner. You can imagine walking into the bank and just saying, oh, the money is here for what I make of it. All the money is at my disposal for my own happiness. No, it belongs to someone. Such basic points. But people are so dull. They don't understand. Things belong to somebody. Although they're so mad after possession. They're so mad to own and control. But they can't understand that all the energies belong to someone. Because they are so dull, it makes preaching difficult. They have been falsely educated. So many years in school, not understanding one real thing. How many years do people go to school? First of all, when they finish college, what's that, 12 or 13 years? College, I think you call it high school. Yeah. Well, total from beginning. Yeah, how many years is that? 12 years. If they're 12, 13. And then 3 more years in the uni, at least. 15 years. You imagine 15 years. 3/4 of your year spent learning not one relevant thing. Not one important thing. Incredible. And you wonder why people are so dull. We must educate them. What is matter? What is spirit? Another news reporter was, he was telling Prabhupada that, so many people, they are being fooled by false gurus. So you think Prabhupada would go on the defensive and say something like, well, I'm sorry that's happening, and yes, so many people, it's unfortunate. No, he immediately said, why be a fool? Why should people be fooled by false gurus? They should know. Why should you be fooled? They should not be fooled. In other words, it's their fault. They should know what they're doing. They should be educated in spiritual science. Why should they be fooled and become fooled? Totally unexpected angle you'd think you'd take. In this way, Srila Prabhupada is showing us how to always try to inject the message of Krishna consciousness. So then Prabhupada asked the reporter, do you know what is the goal of life? And the man said, well, I think so. Prabhupada replied, what do you mean you think so? First you're asking about people being cheated by gurus, you're asking about gurus, and then I ask you, do you know the goal of life? And you say, I think so. First you understand what the goal of life is, then you try to understand what guru is. But if you don't know what the goal of life is, how will you ever choose someone to help you? So he said again, what is the goal of life? And the man said, he hesitated. The Prabhupada wouldn't let him off the hook. Come on, you tell me, what is the goal? The man still hesitated. And Prabhupada said, you be the guru, you tell me, what is the goal? So then the man came up with the answer everybody likes to say today. The goal, I guess, the goal is to be happy within myself. And Prabhupada immediately replied, that is dog happiness. The dog also feels happiness within himself. This is in Australia, the Aussies, they can take a hit. So Prabhupada didn't flinch a bit. The guy said, the answer that everybody would give and think would be satisfactory. The goal of life is to be happy within yourself. No, that is dog happiness. The dog also feels happy within himself when he barks. Think about it. You ever watch dogs when they like to bark at people and they feel good about it? They feel like they're expressing themselves. So many animals, you can watch, they have some favorite activity. When you pet a cat, it purrs. It feels good within itself. What else? Fish, if you watch fish in the tank, when you put some fish food in, the fish are always, they're so attached to their tongue, they're always swimming around. And there's some bits of food in the top, and they feel good within themselves. So Prabhupada's pointing out, very dramatically, that is not the standard of human life. To simply feel good within yourself. Now that is a radical, revolutionary point. Totally radical. I mean, people, they'll be astounded. How can you criticize someone saying the goal of life is to be happy within themselves? But Prabhupada immediately jumped on the guy's case. It was a news reporter, too. Said, that is dog happiness. The dog feels happy barking within himself. A human being is meant for something else. What is the human being meant for? Real happiness. What is real happiness? Don't die. Don't get old. Otherwise, every other kind of happiness is ruined by old age, disease, and death. So this is Prabhupada's basic preaching approach. You cannot say that I'm simply trying to be happy within myself and be classified as a human being. Isn't that a radical point? Try it out on your parents or some other times. People are astounded. But the Srimad Bhagavatam does not accept that standard. Real happiness for human beings means to stop your death, stop your old age. You must think, I'm trying to be happy, and every time, I'm always being harassed by birth, death, disease, and old age. I must do something about it. When you do something about it, then there is happiness. Otherwise, no. There's no human happiness without making a solution to these miseries. Sometimes we forget these basic points because so many people are running around today talking about spiritual and happiness and inner awareness. We need to get back to the basics sometimes and understand these points. Otherwise, we get a little hazy ourselves. Sometimes we even hear our own devotees going around saying, well, I'm just trying to be happy within myself. I'm just trying to feel good about myself and have a positive conception of myself. Forgetting what is the mission of human life. So it's quite astounding to meditate on that point. For me, it certainly is. Simply to think, I want to be happy within myself, that is dog happiness? Very revolutionary. Totally destroys all your hopes for sense gratification. You should really think about it. What could you do wrong to be happy within yourself? Then you think about the dog barking. How they like to bark. The dog is happy within itself. Is that the kind of happiness I want? Expressing myself through the senses? Or chickens, roosters, they like to make those sounds. They're happy within themselves. I'm getting the same thing. Anyway, these are things that I like to meditate on. Showing you how revolutionary Krishna consciousness is. It requires intelligence. The reporter asked Prabhupada, so how is your movement doing in Australia? Prabhupada replied, expanding slowly because the subject matter is so difficult. Because people are so dull, they cannot understand difficult subject matter. Any questions? Yes.
Back to the version, full mountains, nice guys and full mountains. So you've been to Vrindavan.
Have you been all over Vrindavan, everywhere?
Well, you're talking about the whole 80 square miles, no.
Physically speaking, you haven't been everywhere. And what about spiritually speaking? All right, then. Because otherwise, next question you'll ask me is how Krishna fits all those, that incalculable number of cows within 80 square miles. Someone had the nerve to ask Prabhupada that question. You have not seen all 80 square miles physically, and we certainly have not seen it spiritually. Oh, you have. You cannot see Vrindavan with your material eyes. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, as everybody knows, said you cannot buy a ticket to Vrindavan. You want to go to Vrindavan? You go to Vrindavan through devotional service. Then through your service, Krishna will reveal everything to you. The tall mountains and the gardens. And yes?
Just to follow up on that, what's the necessity then of going to the physical Vrindavan in India? Why are you spending so much money?
It is beneficial for your spiritual life. Is if unless one can please Krishna through devotional service, you will not get very much realization in Vrindavan. It will appear, as you said, to be a dusty town surrounded by deserts. We're not a sightseeing organization. We are a devotional service organization. And for devotees who are serving Krishna very intensely, when you go to Vrindavan in that attitude, then you become free from material contamination, and you become renewed in your vigor to serve Krishna. Particularly for preachers, Prabhupada said that his preaching in this age of Kali is very contaminated, and so just to keep the preachers clean, they go to the holy dham from time to time. But if we're not engaged in devotional service at a sufficient pace, if we're not chanting properly, simply to go to Vrindavan for sightseeing, your spiritual senses aren't developed yet. You won't pick up on even a fraction of what is available there. So Prabhupada's plan was not that people just take, even devotees just go sightseeing in Vrindavan. His plan was that devotees, upon serving Krishna very intensely, then they go to Vrindavan or Mayapur in order to rejuvenate and become free of any unconscious material contamination. Krishna consciousness is not a social club or a travel club. It's a devotional service club. Yes.
Organize the movement in such a way that everyone in their new high condition can feel sort of happiness, you know? And then there's the other school of thought, like they say, that Prabhupada, he pushes really, tries to push them beyond that to, you know, full surrender.
So which do you want?
No, I just,
which do you want?
In one of Prabhupada's letters, he was saying that, you know, in their high condition, you know, the organizers should organize the society in such a way that that everyone should be happy and Krishna is something that will advance for those who can actually take up different degrees of surrender to the
spirit. You're sure what letter says that?
Yeah.
You like that letter, huh? If it does say that. First of all, we're not sure it says that. Secondly, why you picked that one out of all the thousands of letters? First of all, we're not so sure it says it like you said it. There is no happiness in the material world. Sometimes even our devotees are forgetting this point, you know. There is no happiness in the material world. Real happiness is by satisfying Krishna's senses. We are offering devotional service. At least karma yoga. You're attached to acting in a certain way, but do it for Krishna. And real bhakti means you're not attached to the service you do, and you're not attached to the results. People go, that is true, they start Krishna consciousness, and then they stop. But still, they never lose what they've done. The credit that they've done, they've never lose. They never lose it. They're guaranteed a human form of life in the next birth, and there they can start their progress again. So when viewed on the eternal platform, we should not be so concerned that people go. They'll never lose the progress they've made. On the other hand, of course, we're sorry that people go, but at the same time we recognize the nature of living in the material world. It's a battle against material contamination. The best thing we can do to keep people engaged at Krishna's lotus feet is to ourselves always demonstrate the joy of serving Krishna through devotional service. That's very contagious, you know. Hopefully, New Varshana will be a beacon for that, the joy of devotional service. So that those who are not having the opportunity to be so fully engaged, they can at least see what the standard is. And they'll be happy to support that standard, even though they themselves, for family reasons or job reasons, can't control. contribute as much of their energies. Still, they should support those who are giving all their energies. And we don't want New Varshana simply to be some little sleepy farmlet or garden. Sleepy garden. We want it to be a place that demonstrates the joy of serving Krishna. Even if just a few persons here are doing that, it will make all the difference. As far as people coming and people going from Krishna consciousness, that'll always happen. Everyone has their individual responsibility to meet or to ignore. The prime necessity is devotional service. The prime necessity is not to be a member, a card-carrying member of a certain organization. That is not Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada established it. The prime necessity is, through Srila Prabhupada's movement, to engage in devotional service. We want that opportunity. We want to make that opportunity available to others. We're not interested in official religiosity. Rubber stamp yourself. I'm Christian. I'm Jew. I'm Hare Krishna. No. We're interested in Sanatana Dharma. That is devotional service. That is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Devotional service. And when Krishna is pleased, you'll automatically be happy because you are part of Krishna. Mr. Sringa, you had a question?
I was going to ask about something that I've been wondering. Somebody quoted me in the verse, or quoted me, that says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even whimsical devotional service, one can go to hell if he's doing it whimsically. I was wondering where that quote comes from.
Have you seen it?
Have you seen it? No.
Well, you'll have to show it to me. The quotes in Prabhupada says increase exponentially every year. So seeing is believing. You show it to me. In the Bhagavad Gita, in that verse, in the 18th chapter, which says, Chetasa Sarva Karmani, Maya Sanyasya Matpara. When you're doing service, you're thinking, I am the servant of Krishna. This is for Krishna's pleasure. Is that like? My wife should be like this. The relationship should be like that. Yeah. If it's not like that, you get really disturbed, you know? So we should also be like that in terms of Krishna's service. Krishna should get this. I should give Krishna that. It should be very nice. That is bhakti. It's amazing. We all know how to take care of ourselves. But then when it comes to serving Krishna, I don't really know. What should I do? Devotional service, no matter how small and insignificant it seems, is a chance to give pleasure to Krishna. Even sweeping the floor will take you back to Godhead. If you sweep the floor in perfect consciousness of Krishna, then you are in Vrindavan. And if you're in Vrindavan and your senses haven't been purified by devotional service, then you're actually not in Vrindavan. That's what Lord Nityananda and Advaita Acharya implied to Lord Chaitanya. He was asking them, why did you trick me? I wanted to go to Vrindavan, and instead you brought me to Advaita Acharya's house in Shantipur. What did Nityananda tell him? Moramana Vrindavana. Wherever your mind is, that is Vrindavan.
Pilgrimage to the Holy Dham.
We're not speaking pilgrimage to the Holy Dham. We're speaking about real pilgrimages to the Holy Dham. Go on.
This is Radhi, really, the pure Radhi has Vrindavan with him. This pilgrimage to the Holy Dham is living in the Holy Dham meant to help Does it increase the...
Yes. Pilgrimage definitely helps. No doubt about it. But what does the Bhagavatam say about the pure devotees? Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani. Wherever they go, that's the holy place of pilgrimage. The problem, though, is what do you do not only when you're in Vrindavan, but when you leave Vrindavan? Just like Rath Yatra. The scriptures say, I believe the Bhavishya Purana, that anyone who sees the Rath cart, they become liberated. So this was asked to Srila Prabhupada once. If the scriptures it says, anyone who sees the Rath cart, they become liberated. Prabhupada said, yes, that is correct. But what will you do after you have been liberated by seeing the Rath cart? If you simply go back to your sinful activity, what is the use? It's not that you go, oh, the Rath cart I have seen, now I'm liberated, and go back to your sense gratification. At that moment, when you're seeing the Rath cart, you have your chance. You are free from sinful reactions. But then you go right back into your sinful activities, what is the use? Prabhupada gave the example that it's like, if you hear the statement, anyone who goes to the hospital will be cured. I mean, we're speaking conventionally. Anyone who goes to the hospital will be cured. That's not an exaggeration. But implicit in that statement is that a person doesn't just go into the door of the hospital and then walk out. No, they go into the hospital and take up the purificatory curing practices. So similarly, when the scriptures say, anyone who sees the Rath cart is liberated, implicit in that statement is that you see the Rath cart, meaning you don't engage in sinful activity anymore. Otherwise, simply to see the Rath cart and then go right back into your horrible activities, what is the point? So many times we see that devotees, they go to the holy dham and they come back and go right back into their normal, not so spiritual lifestyle. Sometimes though, weak devotees go to the holy dham and come back very enthusiastic. They make a change. The whole point is devotional service. This is a devotional service club. We show our love for Krishna through devotional service. Devotional service begins with chanting the holy name. Otherwise, there's no question of understanding Krishna. Not possible in this day and age. And we can see, without the Maha Mantra, without Bhakti Yoga, we are simply looking for dog happiness. I want to be happy within myself. That's what we'll be left pursuing. Ladies, any questions? So nice to read this chapter about Vrindavan. Even from the material point of view, it's teaching you what real opulence is. Garden-like places, a very happy, suitable place for the cows and other animals. That's real wealth. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.